I want to tell you a story. It's a story about a scandal, broken relationships, gossip, rumors, money, corporate rivalry, and a broom. A performance-enhancing broom. My name is John Cullen. I'm a comedian, podcaster, and for 20 years, I was a semi-professional curler. And I want to tell you the story about how a single broom almost imploded the 500-year-old sport of curling.
We felt like we were bringing a knife to a gunfight.
It's the story of a superstar and his fall from grace.
Well, I was being dragged through the mud.
It's the story of two brother entrepreneurs with a dream.
Yeah, I said, that's great news.
It's a story of intrigue.
I still don't understand why we want to keep his name secret.
The full story has never been told, so I'm going to tell it. Broomgate, how a broom almost killed curling.
It was a year I'd like to forget.
To listen to Broomgate, search for Broomgate in your favorite podcast app. That's all one word, Broomgate.
And now, two pigeons bemoaning the fact you can stream DirecTV satellite-free.
Hey, Frank, a little birdie told me you don't need a satellite dish to get DirecTV.
What's the little birdie?
Was it Jimmy the Sparrow?
It's a figure of speech. Point is, you can stream DirecTV over the internet now.
Oh, sure. Next you're going to tell me those big birds are made of metal and filled with people, right?
You mean airplanes?
Stream DirecTV without a satellite dish. Visit DirecTV.com. High-speed internet service required. Terms and restrictions apply.
Welcome to the Leaf Report. This is Clark here. Hello, everybody.
All right, that is our special new introduction, James. Just awesome. I'm such a fan.
Yeah, he's... that's obviously my son. He's 5 years old, and he's taking a keen interest in... in broadcasting. He likes making his own YouTube videos and stuff like that now. So, you know, maybe he's gonna be the next James Duthie or something like that.
That was what came to mind for me. So we'll see. We're gonna track him just like we're gonna track the prospects, the 12 of them that were picked by the Leafs this week.
You know what's crazy, Jonas, that I was thinking of watching that draft is that my son at 5 years old is so much closer in age to those players than we are. He's going to be 18 in like whatever, you know, 12, 13 years. I mean, I haven't been 18 for a long time, a lot longer than that. So,
well, you get little reminders of that when you talk to the prospects. Like, I think it was Joe Miller. He mentioned that I think Alex Killorn, maybe this wasn't Joe Miller, maybe it was John Fusco, but he mentioned that Alex Killorn, when he was at a game at Harvard, flipped him a puck, and you're like, Alex Killorn, of course. Like, Alex Killorn isn't even that old, but like, to Joe Miller or John Fusco, like, Alex Killorn is like old. Anyway, 12 picks, Rodion Amarov, the first pick. I think we should start there, and then we'll kind of get into what we kind of learned about the draft and what we kind of learned ahead of free agency. But let's start with their first round pick. Were you surprised that they went with this kind of player?
No. No, not really. I mean, it fits exactly what Kyle Dubas has always sort of pursued in the draft. I mean, since he took over as the kind of the sole person running it, this was his third draft as the GM. You know, I think the pick actually reminds me a little. I know they're different positions and whatever. It reminds me a little bit of Liljegren, where, you know, it's the same kind of idea, right? It's like at the middle of the first round, there aren't always sure things. I think I read it's something like 50-50 that the player's going to play 200 games at that pick. The middle of the first round is a lot less certain than you think. A lot of good players have been picked there, but there's been a lot of players that didn't do anything that have been picked there as well. So it's like a high pressure place to pick, because the extremes of the outcomes are so, like, if you pick in the top five, you almost always get an NHL player, and often you get a really, really, like, someone like Byfield, or, you know, I was watching the draft, and I was, you know, Byfield gets picked, and they're talking about him, and he just turned 18, and he's humongous, and his numbers are just ridiculous, and it's like, holy cow, like, these players are just, like, unbelievable. Like, you can't really miss that high in the draft. It's very rare that you miss that high in the draft. But when you get to 15, you can easily miss, and I'm not saying that Liljegren's a miss or that Amarov's a miss. I'm just saying that Kyle Dubas really leans in the going for a high ceiling, I think, is probably the right way to put it. And I think that that's what he did with Liljegren, and I think that's what he did with Sandin, and that's what he did with Amarov, is that, you know, players that at that young age stand out for their skill level, and you try and project what they're going to be at 22, 23, 24. You know, the longer it goes along, sorry to talk so much off the top, the longer it goes along, I think the NHL should go to a draft where the majority of the picks are 19-year-olds, because I just think it's too hard to project an 18-year-old player. Like, it's, I think maybe what you could do is the first round you can pick 18-year-olds, but after that you pick 19-year-olds, because teams are really, really guessing in the NHL draft, much more so than other sports. And Kyle Dubas talked about that a little bit.
Yeah, those are all really good points. And I think the upside idea is interesting, just because it was 7 years ago, just over 7 years ago, that with the 21st pick, the Leafs took Freddie Gauthier. And I went back and obviously this week is, and on Wednesday, he was not qualified, so he's gone. But like, I went back and listened to what Dave Nonis said after they made that pick. And he said, like, high end, this guy is a second line center. Low end, this guy is a third line center. And obviously Frederick Gauthier became a fourth line center who, to your point, played or has played 168 NHL games.
Well,
so, and he probably gets to 200, but like, he's not, you can find those guys in free agency every year.
And that was the criticism. That draft was 7 years ago in New Jersey. I remember it very well. You sent me a picture of me standing beside Nonis with a skeptical look on my face. That 2013 offseason was basically a calamity of errors. They signed David Clarkson a week later. They drafted Gauthier with that pick. Some of the players that went soon after Gauthier, Burakovsky, Shea Theodore, you know, who else we got here? Ryan Hartman. There wasn't a lot. Like, that draft kind of illustrates how weak, you know, people like Nick Batan and things like that went soon after. But, you know, there wasn't a whole bunch of slam dunk picks there at the end of that first round. And I think that's where you can get in trouble, where you think, I'm not really sure about any of these kind of high skill guys, so let's take a more safe bet. And a lot of times when you make the safe bet, you end up with a Freddie Gauthier, or not even.
Well, and I just, a couple weeks ago, I did a story on Morgan Riley in the year he was drafted. And like, you look at Ryan Murray drafted second overall, and the idea with Ryan Murray is like, he was really safe and he's fine. Like, he's had a fine NHL career, but he's just fine. And like, that's a second overall pick.
He's had a lot of injuries though too, Jonas. I mean, there are still people around the league that really like Ryan Murray, but they like him, you know, cause like a second pair kind of guy. And,
right.
Where, yeah, I mean, the Riley pick was an excellent pick. I remember being at that draft, and it felt like it kind of came out of left field because no one had any idea that's what the Leafs were looking at. We all thought they were probably going to take a forward. And when Forsberg slipped to there, I thought that's probably what they were going to do. And that would have been a fine pick, too.
Yeah.
But, I mean, Riley was into the NHL quickly, and he was a very good player pretty quickly. And it was a bold pick, just given how little he had played at that point. But I remember when they made it, and it's like, yeah, okay, that makes sense. You know, you're betting on high-end skill. Like, so what if he hurt his knee? Like, knees get fixed, and, you know, you probably got a, you know, if he wouldn't have hurt his knee, he probably would have went second, third, or fourth, right?
Yeah. Well, maybe ahead of, well, man, I don't know how they took Griffin Reinhardt ahead of him. I guess he was huge and whatever. Anyway. You could see, obviously, with the 12 picks that size was not a thing that they cared about. Kyle Dubas, John Lilly, they made clear afterwards that, like, if there was a guy, it's that old line, if there's a guy who's 6'4 and has all the skill, they'll take him, but, like, they're not going to shy away from it. But it is interesting that at a time, like, when they are being questioned about the types of players that they go get, that they just kind of lean in even harder. But I did think it was interesting, you know, Kyle Dubas made the point that you try to get like the really skilled players because those big guys, and I think of like Patrick Maroon or I don't know, like Zach Bogosian, who was a top five pick, but like those guys who people are kind of craving for, you can get. The hard thing to get is like skilled guys. Like, look at what's out there in free agency. Like, you just can't get it. So if you can draft it and develop it, you're better off in the big picture. Does that make sense?
Well, Yeah, in drafting.
Or do you not like that they went so hard?
No, I mean, no, I think it's fine. Honestly, I think it's fine. You just, like, if they hit on these players, like, I think it's fine if you draft a bunch of, you know, of Chinkov guys who are, you know, 160 pounds, who are skilled in the fifth round. You just have to hit on some of these picks. Like, you can't.
Yeah.
Some like, the thing you don't, like, if these guys are all Nick Petans or, like, they're all fringe NHLers, then it doesn't really give you anything. So, you know, it's really important that if you, that some of these players are difference makers, you know, and you need them to be first and second liners. You know, I think that, you know, what you're saying is, it's not even just size, Jonas, it's like style of play. You look at who's available, you know, and we're going to talk about free agency, I'm sure, in a little bit. And I wrote about kind of what some of the players that fit their plans are going to be. You can find not even just size, but good two-way players that can play on your third and fourth line for not a lot of money most years in free agency. Because those guys kind of, like, change teams more frequently. And so looking to project in terms of skill as opposed to trying to draft some more grinder type guys makes sense. I think what you're seeing too, Jonas, is that the Leafs are trying to take the best player available on their list and not factor in, I'm sure they factor it in, and not over prioritize size and grit, whereas other teams probably still are. But we're not going to know if other teams have over prioritized it until, like, we see 3 or 4 years down the road how the draft class plays out. Like, it's, you and I are not junior Russian league, Finnish league experts. We have not seen these guys play. Now, we can talk to people who know things, you know, like about Amarov. And I talked to Bob Hartley, who coaches against him all the time in the KHL, and he gave me some good information. But we can't project what these guys are going to be in 3 or 4 years. But I think that the story of do the Leafs have it right or do the other teams have it right? That's going to become very clear in, you know, 3 to 5 years.
Yeah, and you just wonder, like, about some of these guys who are so small. Like, I look at a guy like STA. It's really hard to think, like, that guy's going to be able to survive in the NHL. Maybe. It's just like, it's just, he's so, and like, one of the guys they took this week, Joe Miller, is even smaller, and maybe he gets bigger and maybe he grows and all that stuff. And Patan's a really good example. Like, it's, I don't know if it's about size with Patan as much as it is, like, I just don't think he's, like, quick enough to kind of be a top six kind of player in the NHL. I did think it was interesting. Go ahead, sorry.
I was just going to say, Amarov, you watch the YouTube videos and he's just, like, burning through the middle of the ice. And it's like, okay. Like, you know. And the thing too with Amarov is that, I mean, his agent says he's 6'1", 185. The Leafs, what did the Leafs say he was? Around 180?
Like 182 or something.
So, like, I mean, it's not like, I called him in the article small-ish. And some of the readers got upset with that. But, you know, he's like average or a little bit below average. Like, he's not tiny. And if he can skate like that, it's like, okay, this is a package that makes sense at where they picked him.
Yep. And I did think it was very notable that basically 11 of the 12 picks are guys that you don't have to make a decision on very soon at all. Especially right now, given, like, who knows what's going to happen this season in some of the junior leagues, who knows what's going to happen next season. If you can get, like, a really long window to evaluate these guys, all the better, I think, for the Leafs.
Dubas talked about that before the draft. He was saying that with the North American, out of the North American junior leagues, the window's even smaller because they're drafting in October and you only get them, you're supposed to get them for 2 years, but it's even less than 2 years. Instead of getting them for 23 months and then re-entering the draft 2 years later, you get them, I mean, how many months have we lost here? July, August, September, you know, you get them for 20 months instead of 23. So it's like a very, very tight window of time. And, you know, the Leafs are going to have to decide whether or not they want to give these guys entry-level contracts when they're, you know, 20, 21 years old. And even then, with a lot of them, you're not going to be 100% sure what they're going to be. So these are a lot of these are like lottery tickets. So
totally. But it's not just the number of months. It's like, how many games are they going to be able to play in the next 20 months? Like, it's just, who knows? It's But so the draft was interesting. Obviously, it took 5 years. It was not a good planning.
Why did it take so long?
Well, there's too much passing along, and every team was taking all their time. But like, to go from the TV studios to the commissioner to the team is just 200 and whatever times is insane. Anyway,
another casualty of COVID is that the day two of the draft went from being like, normally it's what, like 4 hours long? Normally it starts
max
at like 10 in the morning, and they just rip off all those picks. Like, teams are anxious to get on the plane and get out of there, I think, when you're in person. Whereas maybe if you're sitting on a Zoom call, I felt sorry for those guys on TV. Like, holy cow, can you imagine being on TV, live TV, for 8 hours straight? It's just wild.
And then talking about like random prospect X in like the sixth round, like, it's not easy.
Did you watch the whole thing? Like, they were getting into some like Brian Lawton was talking about flying on weird planes in Russia and stuff, and like they were off on like all these tangents and everything. And I'm you know, as a huge hockey nerd, I was interested in it. The problem for us obviously is that you know, our work starts when the draft ends, and if the draft never ends, then. Then you and I are, you know, you and I were talking at like 2 o'clock in the morning last night. So, but it was interesting, you know, after the draft, John Lilly and Kyle Dubas and Sheldon Keefe all talked to the media. So there were some pretty good tidbits in there that gave us an indication of what they were thinking, not only for the draft, but for free agency too.
Perfect segue. That's what's next on my list.
Looking for an assist with your credit card, but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service anytime. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
We did get a pretty good window, or better window than we've had before, into what they're looking for. Obviously, God, I can't use this hard to play against line anymore. Like, we need to. Well, I'm not using that. I need a different way to.
It's better than Moxie or whatever the other.
I like Moxie. That's better. Let's not use the cliches. Let's not sandpaper and all this.
Well, I think you've used grit a lot. You had it in a headline like recently too. And
because they used it.
Yeah. You know, it's funny, you know, we write about what the Leafs are trying to do and we make it really clear that that's what we're writing about. And then you get all these complaints because that's not what the fans want them to do. Like, I think that the Leafs have made it pretty clear that what they're going to do in free agency is not going to be super sexy. You know, the message that they're giving is they like kind of their star players. Like, let's face it, when Sheldon Keefe took over from there until the end of the regular season anyway, the Leafs were the highest scoring team in the league. They were unbelievable on the power play. They were a really dangerous offensive team. So they're not really trying to dismantle that or change that in any fundamental way. And they've said flat out they want to make the blue line better, and that probably means, to me, adding one right shot defenseman that can play in the top four. And they want to, I don't know if you want to call it grit or hard to play against. They just want to add guys that are going to make the other team's life more difficult in on the third and fourth line. You know, they want to add some kind of like buzzsaw kind of players.
Yeah, I wrote about it a few weeks ago. I think it was a few weeks ago. And I kind of picked out some of the things that John Cooper had described with his third line guys like Goudreau and Coleman. And one of the lines that like I could never shake was, I think he said something along the lines of Julian Breezewell went and got them guys who have a little grease under their nails or dirt under their nails or something like that. And that's kind of what I was thinking when I was writing the story. Like, that's kind of what it felt like the Leafs were missing. Just a little like moxie, spunkiness, like bite, like some guys who are kind of like assholes to play against. Like, they just didn't have enough of that. Who you shove me, I'm gonna shove you harder. Like, and it's such a hard element to measure because it's just intangible, but that's what it felt like they were missing, especially against Columbus, because Columbus has a lot of guys like that. And obviously Dubas and Keefe kind of spelled that out, and I think it was interesting in asking Keefe about it, and he said, like, you have to be careful. Like, you don't want to go too far and get guys who can't play, you know. And that's what you and I have kind of tried to figure out in looking at some of the names, is like, who are the guys who can bring that but also aren't going to hurt you in other ways.
What was the, you asked a question along those lines to Sheldon Keefe kind of about, well, I think you more asked about size, like do you sacrifice skill and...
Yeah.
There's a balance there. But, you know, looking through the list of free agents and the names that, that especially at the forwards that I picked out, now that we have a better idea of what they want, moving on from Gauthier kind of crystallizes what they want. And, you know, I think they really want another center that can play on their third or their fourth line who has a little bit of skill but who has a lot of defensive acumen. They want kind of like a Manny Malhotra kind of a center. Like someone who can eat a lot of really difficult minutes, win faceoffs, play against other teams, good players. They didn't, talking to people around the organization, they didn't have that last year, really. Like they couldn't really rely on that Kerfoot line or the Gauthier line to play against other teams' top lines. So if you can't play those lines against other teams' top lines, then your star players have to do it every time, and then they have to take defensive zone starts and... It takes away from what they're able to do, and players like Tavares and Matthews have to focus a lot more on defense than if you have another center who can eat some of those minutes. And these are not going to be sexy additions to the roster. It's not like signing Pietrangelo or Taylor Hall or whatever, because I just don't think that's the conversation the Leafs are in. But they could be really important additions. And it reminds me of when the Leafs added Jay McClemon, except that I think that this iteration of the Leafs management wants to get a guy who's got a little bit more ability than Jay McClemon. But that kind of idea of a stopper kind of player who is only going to put up 20 or 25 points, but who's going to be really good on the penalty kill and really good defensively. And other teams, you know, if you're a star on the other team, you see that guy come over the boards and you're like, oh man, I got to go against that guy again. The Leafs need more of that, and they especially need it at center. Like they're too thin. They've obviously got the two star centers, but they're too thin at three and four center in terms of defensive acumen and ability to play in the penalty kill. And so I think that's going to be a big priority here, is that they're going to try and find someone who's really good in that Gauthier role that might not cost a lot of money. And this is where like the analytics department and all that stuff's going to come in, and they're going to try and find someone who can do that. And it'll be interesting to see how much of a difference that could make on this team.
Well, they did have a center who sort of was like that, and they traded him last summer, obviously, in Kadri.
But I'm talking about a fourth line center.
But you're talking about the fourth line center. But I'm talking about
someone like, making like $1 million, $1.5 million.
Well, and the problem with like Gauthier in that role, and you and I were texting about it last night, is you couldn't really do anything with him. Like you didn't really want to put him on the ice for a defensive zone draw against a good line. You don't really want to waste him for an offensive zone draw, so you're kind of like, you don't really use him to kill penalties. He's not really that good a faceoff guy, although he got better, and I think he was like 54-55%, but he's not like a guy you're throwing out there to win you a game and win that defensive zone draw. So he didn't really give you kind of anything. And so maybe, let me ask you, like, is there a name that comes to mind for you, someone who kind of fits that profile?
Well, I put out my list of 23 players the Leafs could pursue in free agency. So it was hard to do because I'm digging through these guys that you see. Like, you don't notice these kinds of players that much when you're watching games. You're not looking at the fourth line center of, like I've got guys that played for, like, Buffalo and Florida. And you think about it, and it's like, is like the fourth line center or the third line center from Buffalo going to help the Leafs? And it's like, well, maybe it's a good player playing on a bad team, a good player in that role playing on a bad team with bad line mates and bad defensemen around him. And you put him on a good team and you play him the minutes that he's going to excel in. And, you know, the one name that stood out to me was Johan Larsson from the Sabres. And I talked to some people about him, and they really like kind of, his competitiveness level. And there's not a lot of offense there, but defensively he's very, very good. You look at some of the underlying numbers, you look at some of the RAPM charts that Evolving Hockey produces, and I've got one of them in my story. His defensive metrics are unbelievably good. Like expected goals against, he's extremely good at limiting that. That might be the kind of player that they look at. And I think he only made 1.5 last year. Maybe you get a guy like that and you give him a 2 or 3 year deal. It's around that level of money. You spend a little bit more to get a little bit more ability on your fourth line center. And he's the kind of guy that can jump up and play with skilled players on your third line too at times if there are injuries or whatever. And I just feel like that's the kind of player that the Leafs are going to pursue. And Some other names, Lucas Walmark is another guy who played a lot in Carolina in that role. Mark Jankowski from Calgary, who had a really poor year, but I think he had 30-some points the year before that. Derek Brassard. You know, Evan Rodriguez is someone that they looked at. You know, I had one of his former coaches with another NHL team said that they thought that he was effective as a center iceman more than a winger, even though he's played a lot of wing in his career.
They couldn't agree with him, obviously.
Well, I think what's happening is the Leafs are trying to read ahead to what the market's going to be for guys like that, and they're basically trying to squeeze players like that. Like this happened, I mean, the Kyle Clifford conversation is a little bit different than that, but, you know, they're trying to say the market's going to be really tight. Rodriguez, we'll give you 3 years at $1 million or 2 years at $1 million. And Rodriguez is saying, you know what, like, I think he was making two or something like that last year. I can get more than that in free agency. I'm not going to settle right now. But what could happen is he could get to free agency on Friday and there are no offers, or the offers are as bad or worse than the Leafs. And he could come back and he'd be like, you know what, your offer actually wasn't that bad in this environment. And there's some disagreement right now between agents and teams over how much players are worth because of how unique this year is. So, you know, the Leafs are going to be, in some respects, they're going to be bargain shopping. Like if they go into free agency and they're like, you know what, we really like Mikko Koivu, or we really like Johan Larsson, or we really like Walmark, and then some other team offers those guys, or Brassard, and then some other team offers those guys $2.5 million, the Leafs can be like, no thanks, we're going to go to like the next option and see, you know, because they still don't have a lot of money. They can free some up if they trade some guys. And it certainly seems like they are going to trade some guys. I mean, listening to Sheldon Keefe last night, it's, you know, he was talking about trading, or not trading, about changing the depth, the depth forwards they have. And you look at the group, I mean, they're not going to trade Matthews, Marner, Tavares, Nylander. They're not going to trade Hyman. They're not going to trade Robertson. They're not going to trade Mikheyev. They're not going to trade Barabanov, who they just got. They're not going to trade Jason Spezza. I mean, that's like nine players right there. So who might they trade to change their defensive forwards? Basically, the guys I didn't list: Janssen, Kerfoot, Engvall, the names that we've been kind of punting around for a while now. It feels almost certain one of them's going to go, and my guess would probably be two of them, to free up cap space and to free up roster spots for the kind of players that I was talking about earlier.
Well, and if you can pay one of those guys, like you're paying Janssen 3.4 and you're paying Kerfoot 3.5, like if you can find a guy, one of those guys, or even like somebody I like Jesper Fast or Nick Cousins, and you can pay those guys two or one and a half, and like suddenly you're not really dipping off that much, like maybe offensively you're dipping off, but defensively you're improving. Now you can take that money and spend it elsewhere. It just makes sense to kind of move the puzzle pieces around that way. You mentioned Kyle Clifford. I do think we should hit on that for a second. You reported that they offered him a 3-year deal, which like kind of blew my mind. I would not give Kyle Clifford a 3-year deal. What do you make of that?
Yeah, I was surprised. I mean, that's why it was the top of my piece, not today, but I believe it was on Monday I wrote that story. I had heard that a couple of weeks ago, and I just had to do some more digging to confirm it. I couldn't nail down the exact number. I guessed that it was around $1 million with some of the people I was talking to, and they said, "Oh no, it was more than that." And they made it sound like it was quite a bit more. And I was like, "Okay." So I think they offered like 3 years and close to $1.5 million for Kyle Clifford, and that's really surprising. And I think that if you're a Leafs fan, it's a little bit concerning, just because, I mean, Clifford didn't really play that much. You know, like some of these other guys, like Walmark and whatever, you know, Rodriguez and whatever, like those guys have played 12, 13, 14 minutes, albeit not always on great teams, but they've been able to step up in the lineup and play with good players. And like, that's not Kyle Clifford. Like, he was only playing 9 minutes a game. And I think they really like Kyle Clifford, the person. I think they really thought he brought something to their dressing room. I think they liked his experience. I think they were looking at paying a little bit more to get some of that. Like, they're trying to like get more Muzzini like guys in the dressing room, and they felt like Kyle Clifford gave them that. The problem is that might almost be too far in the direction of not enough skill coming to the table for what they were going to pay him. So I wonder if they looked at it and they're like, you know what, we're paying Engvall 125. Like, would we rather have Clifford at 1.5? You know, maybe. But those are the kind of players that they're going to be looking at. And as I think if you're a fan, you're hoping that they don't make a mistake and overpay one of those guys.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
We should take a pause, actually, for 1 second. I should remind you, Brian Burke is going to be on the Full 60 with Craig Custance on Thursday. And then on Friday, they're going to recap the 2020 draft with Scott Wheeler and Corey Praman. So be sure to check that out. Those guys are insane how much they know about the prospects. Like, Jesus.
The coverage was unbelievable how good it was. Like, it's just, well, they you know, those guys prepare the whole year for those couple of days. And last year, we mostly just had Corey doing it, and we decided to change Scott Wheeler's role so that he was full-time on prospects. And I think it was last year, maybe it was 2 years ago now. Time's flying by, Jonas. And Scott's just done a great job. It's been fantastic having both of them do it. And you look at some of the kids we're getting picked, and then we have these features. You know, Wheeler had a feature about the, I think it was a 6th round pick that the Leafs made, the Mietinen kid from Finland. I mean, what, there's not very many outlets have like in-depth features on 6th round picks, you know, ready to go. So there was a lot of really good content, and I encourage people to, if you're not signed up, sign up. TheAthletic.com/LeafReport. This is the best sale we've ever had for The Athletic. So now is the time to sign up. I've been part of the company for almost 4 years. It's the best sale we've ever had. And
feels what like is it, got $1.25 a month?
Something like that. Like it's a really good deal. Sign up for a month. If you decide it's not for you, we understand. But most people that sign up stay. You know, I saw a stat at one point that something like, I think it was something like 87% of the people that had signed up to read my stories or something were still signed up. And like I said, I've been writing for almost 4 years. So, you know, it's most of the people that check out the subscription seem to like it. I was going to say something
else. Right.
I went on a tangent there. Oh, I was going to say,
You've been going on tangents today.
Yeah, well, I didn't get a lot of sleep the last couple of days. I've been working like, yesterday I was working like literally 10 a.m. till 2:30 in the morning. So
okay, well, let me finish my thought before you finish yours. What I was going to say about free agency, which I think makes it really difficult this year, anybody who's been in like one of these like auctions for whatever sport, like for fantasy sports, sometimes you go into these things and you're like, okay, who's got enough money? How is it going to go? And sometimes the strategy is like, let's spend early and get the guys. And then what sometimes happens is you realize, oh, I shouldn't have spent early. I should have waited and gotten a better deal later on. The other side of that is sometimes you wait and then there's nobody left. And so it'll be interesting to see how they kind of play this, because they could look at a guy like, I don't know, Koivu, and they'll look at him and be like, nah, we can get someone cheaper than that. And then suddenly like it's musical chairs and there's no one. So it's going to be interesting, given that no one knows what the prices or the landscape is going to look like, how you kind of navigate that.
Well, Kyle Dubas has said repeatedly that, you know, not having that interview period means that they're going in a bit blind. Like, they're not really sure. There's a few guys that have been given permission to talk to other teams that they can talk to, and they can talk to some agents. And the problem with talking to agents is agents are going to say that the guys are all worth more than what might end up happening. Like, the agents are going to go and be like, oh, the market's really weak and no one's going to get any money. And I think with the situation you're talking about, Jonas, what you need to do is be extremely well prepared and have an idea what the number you're willing to go to is on all of the players that you like. And that when in an auction draft, I remember going into auction drafts and just having like a number, like a price number next to every player. And if the bidding goes way over that number, then you move on to the next one. And you know,
but it's like, do you start at that number, James, or do you start like a lot lower? And then like, do you risk losing the player because some other team is like, we'll just give it to you now?
Well,
you know what I mean?
I think you try and make sure that the player comes back to you again and gives you an opportunity to see what they signed for. And I think you can say, oh, we're really, really interested, and here's our initial offer. And it's all a negotiation, right? It's like buying a car or buying a house, or, I mean, it's, except it's more like an auction with all these other interested parties involved. And I just think with some of the guys we're talking about, as I said, they're not the sexiest names. I wonder if the Leafs are the first to the table for some of these like fourth line center guys, and they're offering 2 or 3 years, and they're offering an amount of money that's okay, that's sort of in line with what they've made before. They might get these guys. You know, other teams might be focused on all these other bigger names. And it's not to say the Leafs won't go after any bigger. I mean, we haven't talked about the defense at all yet. We've spent a lot of time talking about the forwards. I think mostly just because we've exhausted the defense conversation over the last 7 months.
We should talk about that for a second. But, yeah. But to close on that point, James, like, it just will be interesting to see how, I don't know, you go about that and how you kind of figure out what you can spend and where you can attract. And then, like, what do you do with the guys we talked about, like Kerfoot and Janssen? I guess you get to a point later where maybe you just see if you can dump them for a pick.
Well,
and, like, dump them. They're good players. Like,
there's nothing that says you can't go $3, $4, or $5 million over the salary cap. And, you know, I believe you can go $8.1 million over the cap, right? You can go 10% over.
Yeah.
So
you have time.
I think that what the Leafs should probably do is pursue who they want. And if you end up $5 million over the cap or $4 million over the cap, yeah, that money is going to be, might be difficult to dump, but you find a way. I mean, maybe you're putting guys on waivers at a worst case scenario, or you figure that out. But the important thing is you get the players you want. And I mean, the problem with doing it that way is that, it kind of hurts your trade leverage. Like, if you have to move
all
like,
of it,
if you have to move a Janssen and you're $3 million over the cap, teams probably aren't going to be anxious to help you out. So
here's a fifth round pick. Have a good day.
Probably, but maybe maybe that's okay though. Like, maybe that, you know, if you trade him ahead of free agency, you're only going to get a third round pick. So it's like, you know, how much capital are you really expending if you do it that way?
Well, you kind of have to look at it like you're flipping, let's say, Janssen for that player you're replacing him with, who's cheaper and who maybe fits what you need better.
Exactly.
You mentioned the defense. I asked Sheldon Keefe, because Kyle Dubas mentioned that they are looking on defense, and we kind of know what their defense sort of looks like. And he said they're looking for basically a defensive defenseman, a guy who's going to be reliable that way defensively.
Yeah, but it doesn't have to be a defensive defenseman, though. It could be like a hybrid player who's good defensively. That, do you have the quote? Like, can you read the actual quote out?
Yes, I can read you the quote.
It was, like, they want to get someone that can move the puck, though, too. Like, it's not...
Quote, James, quote, we're looking for somebody, I think, that defensively is going to be really strong and reliable.
Yeah, but that doesn't mean...
So that doesn't mean you can't...
Doesn't mean they're a defensive defenseman.
Okay, this is what you do. I'm not saying that they're just good at defense. I'm saying, like, that has to be part of their skill set. Like, that doesn't mean this person can't have skill. It just means, like, a guy we've talked about, like, Kevin Shattenkirk does not make sense for them if you're looking at what this is.
Yeah, and I think that they kind of learned the lesson with Tyson Barrie that, like, they have to make sure that player they get is strong defensively. Regardless of what their skill set is offensively, they have to be good defensively.
So you did the list. I don't think there's actually a lot of guys who kind of fit that. Who are a few that kind of stand out?
I think TJ Brody's probably the best name. Like, I like Dylan DeMello, but obviously he signed a 4-year deal with Winnipeg. So
he would
have been high on the list. I mean, TJ Brody's not big. He's not, like, no one would call him a defensive defenseman, but he's good on defense. You know, he helps keep...
So he's a defensive defenseman.
No. Jonas, that's not what a defensive defenseman is. A defensive defenseman is like Zach Bogosian or something. Like, that's
I think you're taking the term too far. I'm not saying...
You're using the wrong term. You're using the wrong term. Like,
I'm saying a defenseman who has to be good defensively is all I'm saying.
Yeah,
I know. You're just taking it and running with it.
Well, because defensive defenseman means like a guy who's... It means like a Luke Shen or something like that. Like, it means...
That's not what it means to me. But anyway, go ahead.
like TJ Brody's, like I would call a guy like that like a two-way defenseman. Like he's good. He's good.
Oh, God. Talk about cliches.
What?
Anyway, go ahead. Yeah, continue. I'm just chirping you. Go ahead.
No, two-way is not a cliche. Two-way is a description of a player. I mean, I guess Chris Tanev is a, I would call a defensive defenseman.
Defensive defenseman. Nice. Yeah, just somebody like James, you know what it is? Like, it's just somebody who, when you're trying to protect a lead, let's go back to the playoffs and you're in that game, whatever it was, when you're up 3-0 and then it's 3-1 and then it's 3-2, someone like you can put on the ice, like Jake Muzzin, who you're comfortable is going to be able to handle protecting the lead.
And there's no and real,
they just didn't have a lot of those guys.
There's no, there's no, and when Muzzin went down, I was like, they didn't have anyone who could jump in and be that. So there's, I'll read my list. I got TJ Brody, Chris Tanev, Travis Hamonic, Troy Stetcher. It gets really thin. Then you get into a bunch of guys that, you know, like Shattenkirk's a wrong fit kind of stylistically. I think that if the other options are gone, that maybe you could make Shattenkirk work as kind of like a number four defenseman. The problem is he's probably going to get more than the Leafs are going to want to pay him. But then you get into guys who are only third pair guys, and I don't know what you do if, like, Stetcher.
Yeah,
maybe can play some minutes in the second pair, but he's small, and then you get into like Trevor Van Riemsdyk, Zach Bogosian, Gudas. There's not a lot, so I'm gonna be really interested to see what they do. We thought coming in that maybe the trade route would be the way that they address the defense, and that they might give up that first round pick to do it. It feels less likely that that's what's going to happen, that they're going to go the trade route to find that defenseman. So I don't know. I mean, what do you think? I mean, I kind of feel like TJ Brody's going to be their guy.
I guess it just depends what his price will be.
Yeah. He's making 4.6 on a long-term deal before.
Yeah. And like, I'm not offering that. I think he's 30 or 31.
But what do you do? So what do you do? Let's say if TJ Brody's like, I want $4.5 million for 4 years and you don't like that.
Great
like,
question.
Well, that's the thing. Well, like they might have to do that.
You mentioned this to me, and you kind of hit on it earlier, is maybe you go to Tanev, you go to Brody, and you go to Hamonic, and you have a specific offer for each.
Yeah.
And you kind of see who
find the one that will take it. Yeah. I don't know. Looking at the results, to me, it looks like Brody had a pretty good year last year. Tanev looks like he's declining due to injuries and age, and Hamonic looks like he's declining due to injuries and age. Like, yes. Brody looks like he has the most tread on his tires kind of thing. So
the tough part, James, is like you could get into a situation like you're kind of touching on, is where those guys disappear, and then you kind of look around and you're like, uh-oh. And then like you have to sign, you don't have to, but like you sign someone like Bogosian or Gudas, who's on your third pair, and then I guess you're just kind of vaulting Travis Dermott into your top four. Like
Mikko Lehtonen, you know, maybe. But, you know, stylistically, you don't know what he's going to give you defensively. So it's really, there's the three guys. And like I said, Tanev and Hamonic look like they've declined. And if you got to give them a 3 or 4 year deal to get it done, you know, and they're already declining, it's, I don't know. I mean, they're in a bit of a tough position. So I think there still could be a trade. It's just they're kind of running out of time to, you know, if they rely solely on the trade option, they might not be able to get the deal they want, right? So I don't know. I think
they just have to hope, James, that those guys will end up looking around, like they will go into this expecting one thing, and there just might not be enough teams interested in paying them that.
Right. And the Leafs can do things like structure the contract the way they want, and I think what you do is you make it so that you can buy the deal out. You make it so that it's easy to trade. You put a lot of signing bonuses in it. You structure the deal in a way that it's very easy to get rid of the contract in 2 years. And if there's a decline there or the player's not useful, you can either buy them out or you can trade them to another team retaining salary. Or, you know, that might happen with Muzzin towards the end of that contract he signed where they decide to move on from him. And you just, that might be what they have to do with one of these deals. Like maybe you give Brody a 4 year deal, but you get out of it in 2 years, or you expose him in the expansion draft or whatever.
Yeah. All right. Very quickly. And then we got to go. We didn't mention Jeremy Bracco, just that he was not qualified either. We mentioned Goat. And I don't think either is really a surprise. I guess that's the question for you. You're not really surprised by either of those non-qualifies, right?
I heard from other teams that they liked Gauthier, so I was like, well, maybe they'll just qualify him and then trade him for a pick or something. You know, I heard that Montreal liked him.
I think the qualifying James was a bit above minimum. It was like 737.
It was 737
or something.
It was 737. Yeah. I mean, it really wasn't going to be. But, you know, it was Dubas kind of said, you know, to be fair to Gauthier, not to, like, string him along and send him, you know, like, this gives him a chance to pick his destination. And other teams do like him. He's going to sign a contract, probably for around league minimum. He's going to play, you know, 50 games and 8 minutes a game for some other team and do what he does. And it's just, you know, the Leafs are kind of evolving out of needing a player like that. They need someone who's a little bit more multidimensional. And the Bracco thing, that's a tough one. I mean, that's a tough one. And I wonder if, you know, it'll be interesting to see where he lands and if he can get things back on track again. Cause obviously this year was a mess for him and the organization, the Leafs organization just decided, you know what, let's open a space for another prospect, with the Marlies. And, that's about it.
I'm just not sure he'll ever be able to skate well enough to play in the NHL. And that's a thing for a lot of these prospects. Like, if you can't keep up, like, you can be as skilled as anyone, but it won't matter to some degree.
And I think that he got really frustrated with the fact he wasn't getting an opportunity when he saw other players were getting opportunities around him. And
sure.
Sometimes players don't channel that frustration in the right way.
Well, I mean, like, Trevor Moore is, like, undrafted and passes him by and plays in the NHL like last, you know what I mean? Like, it's just guys kept passing him. Anyway, so we will be back to do another podcast as soon as something happens. We don't know what.
Probably tomorrow.
Yeah. So tomorrow is Friday. So maybe you're listening to this on Friday. We will come back with another podcast as soon as something goes down. But, like, maybe it takes a while. Maybe it's not till Saturday or Sunday or Monday or October 15th before something happens. So stay tuned. Check out theathletic.com/leafreport for a subscription. You can read James. You can read myself. You can read lots of other great people. James, anything else to add?
No, thanks to everybody for listening. And it's going to be a really interesting next few days. So look forward to seeing what the Leafs do.
Defensive defenseman. See you, James.
As you've probably heard by now, we've teamed up with BetMGM this season. We'll be using BetMGM lines to make all of our picks, and we'll have special offers for our listeners each week. If you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC, and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager with BetMGM. Here's how it works. Download the BetMGM app and sign up using bonus code THEATHLETIC. Make your first deposit of at least $10, place your first bet on any game, and claim your voucher for a one-year subscription to The Athletic. See BetMGM.com for terms. U.S. promotional offers not available in D.C., Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY 467-369 in New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 in Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-OFF in Iowa. 1-800-270-7117 for confidential help in Michigan. 1-800-981-0023 in Puerto Rico. First bet offer for new customers only in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel. Don't forget, if you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager.